From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Halloween weekend 2020. Unfortunately, most trick-or-treat events are canceled due to the virus, and you know what that means. Parents can't steal candy from their kids this year. And this Sunday, the Packers are back at Lambeau Field playing host to the Minnesota Vikings. Okay, I'm surprised we don't have more New York stories like this one. A guy was standing on the sidewalk minding his own business when a sinkhole opened up and dropped him 15 feet into a pit of rats. Oh yeah, New York, New York, the town's so nice they named it twice. The current administration has canceled plans to offer mall Santas early access to the COVID-19 vaccine. In a public relations campaign, Santa was supposed to promote the vaccine, but the Santa union wanted a better deal, so the feds pulled the plug. And who knew Santa had a union? Okay, the question of the day is, how do you date during a pandemic? Well, and in China, a date set up by his mother. And you know this is going to be spectacularly bad. Well, they met at a restaurant. He came stag. She showed up with 23 of her relatives who ordered expensive meals and drinks. But it gets better. Then the guy was handed the tab for $3,000 plus tip. Well, he didn't have the $3,000. So he did what any of us would do. He snuck out of the restaurant, leaving his date and her 23 relatives to foot the bill. Now that's karma. And speaking of the pandemic, because of self-quarantine, many more people have resorted to playing board games. The upside is the sales of Monopoly have jumped 21%. I'm going to go out on the limb here and guess everyone on this podcast, with one obvious exception, got their start playing Monopoly. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Joel Dreising, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty disappointing week. Worst one for the market since last March. Ugly across the board. NASDAQ lost 5.5% this week, shedding 637 points to close at 10,912. Broader markets down 5.6% for the week, shedding 195 points. And the S&P Stock Composite 500 closed at 3,270. Broader markets still positive slightly for the year, up 2.8%. Total return, including dividends. The Dow Jones Industrial Average sunk into negative territory for the year, down 6.5% this week. Pretty good hit, losing 1,832 points in five trading days. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 26,504. Kyle, it started almost right away Monday morning. The virus counts have been climbing, you know, over 90,000 a day recently. Hospitalizations are close to setting records. And the market clearly didn't like it. You know, we saw a couple of places around the United States restrict their populations. Germany, France did some similar moves. And it seems that, you know, a lot of big money is worried about yet another round of shelter-in-place rules, which, looking back, short-term anyway, was not good for the economy. And the virus counts now are climbing precipitously, almost on a daily basis. So we're back now to focusing on the virus counts. And on that score, news doesn't look all that good.
Yeah, you know, this is certainly a case of bad news is bad news. And for a long time, I think we were, you know, of the opinion that a little bit of bad news might get us a little bit closer to either stimulus, or it might get us a little bit closer to whatever the other side of this is. But I think right now we're mired in kind of the middle of some pretty bad data for, you know, the pandemic. And so investors rightfully concerned about, you know, I think what the short-term implications of this are. I think it is important to note that we've got some longer-term the ability to be a little bit more longer term focused in our own views. And, you know, I don't think this changes the long term outlook all that much. We've been talking, even as the data was getting better in the summer, that, you know, when the weather turned, when we started spending more time inside, this was going to be the time of year when we needed to be a little bit more cautious, and the time of year when we were likely to see cases spike again. Now, I think I'm a little disappointed in how significantly they have spiked. But again, I think this is in line with what we were expecting if people weren't going to take this more seriously. And so, you know, I think we're still waiting on what might happen as far as more stimulus. We're still waiting on what might happen as far as a vaccine, what might happen as far as, you know, better treatments. And, you know, waiting ultimately doesn't do much to move markets forward, especially in a week in which the data got as bad as it did. And so, you know, again, I think I can't stress enough, understandably, we're down pretty significantly this week. I don't think it changes all that much the longer term view, though.
Kyle, when you look at next year, looks pretty likely that we're going to get a vaccine at least at some point next year. And, you know, it's hard not to interpret that as anything other than a game changer. A lot of people don't want to go out and about. They don't feel safe. Well, the only way that's going to change is for them to feel safe, which will potentially occur when the vaccine arrives. So I think it's important for investors to look past the near-term events, look past the election. Elections matter, but not to the stock market as much as you might think. And, you know, look forward into next year when we could have a very different environment. Art, what's your take on this week?
Yeah,
disappointing, of course.
Yeah, well, yes and no. As you guys both suggested, I mean, this was going to happen. I mean, the COVID case is going up. The fact that Congress and the president couldn't provide the stimulus that the economy really needs. It's the stimulus that brought us up from the bottom back in earlier in the year from February into March, once we bottomed on March 23rd. So between the stimulus and the Fed's actions, we got out of a significant hole. So the fact that we're still positive on the S&P, considering especially we were down 31% as in March, I think we formed kind of a baseline, you know, that we can move forward from. The other good thing to me is that we know what the problems are. Back in March or February and March, as we were plummeting, no one knew what was going to happen. At this point, we know what the problem is. The problem is the virus is spreading. And as you indicated, once we get a vaccine, there'll be improvement there. People would start wearing masks. We could get this over with quicker. And the fact that in China, they've mastered this. In Korea, they've mastered this. We've got to get this under control. And again, it is a problem that is happening in Europe, you know, as well. Back to the election just for the moment. This week, as usual, we got questions about, you know, oh, gee, the election's coming. What if so-and-so gets elected, or what if so-and-so gets elected? I hearken back to 4 years ago. The Dow futures plummeted about 800 points on the news that Trump had gotten elected, because it was a shock to the markets. But then we ended the year with the best post-election rally for the Dow since Eisenhower was elected in 1952. So, you know, whatever shocks the market on the night of the election, if there is a shock, I think there'll ultimately be a recovery based upon the expectation that over the long haul, as you guys suggested, stocks always move higher. So we're going to get beyond the COVID thing because of vaccines, because of controlling the virus, and because we're going to have to get some more stimulus. It's going to have to happen, whether it happens later this year or early next year, or we will go off a cliff, and we know that's not going to happen.
Joel, Commerce Department released GDP numbers for the last quarter. Pretty huge, just about everybody expected it. Still got a ways to go yet here. We're 3.5% below the level of the economy a year ago. So good news, bad news. Good news is we're starting to recover. Bad news is the rate of growth is slowing. We see that in industrial production. We see it in confidence numbers. And we're still 3.5% down from where we were at this point last year.
That's right, Bob. You know, it's a really impressive, you know, record growth rate, record growth for the GDP in the third quarter. You know, on the same day that that happened, we also got numbers from the Labor Department on unemployment claims, kind of two maybe separate things seemingly. But, you know, on the one hand, we're looking at economic recovery. On the other hand, we still have 750,000 Americans filing for unemployment for the first time every week. You know, this has been going on for what, 30 some weeks now. So we put the seminar, the usual seminar that we do every year. We've got that on videotape that we put online. One of the things that you mentioned in the seminar is how important those job numbers are for what's going on in the economy. And you know, as we're referring to things like the stimulus, you know, packages, the ones that expired and hopefully the ones that are going to come, that makes a big difference is if people have those jobs, they're going to spend the money. We know that consumer spending is 70% of our economic activity. So we're still looking at those job numbers, but yeah, the GDP numbers were good. And again, we grew a lot, but we still have a ways to go to catch up to where we were. Today, the Bureau of Economic Analysis came up with numbers for consumer spending for September. And those were up, and actually those were accelerated from where they were in August. So that's a good sign too. But those are still 2-3.5% away from where they were before the pandemic started. Actually, the spending level for consumers right now is as low as it was in June of 2019. So we're recovering, but we're not back yet.
Kyle, you wrote an article for our newsletter that goes out to folks later today, a monthly newsletter. Pretty interesting article. You were talking about the study the Economist did at Yale University. Punchline basically is individual investors were as pessimistic as ever in August, according to the survey data. But as we know, stock markets tend to do pretty well after a period of maximum pessimism. Would you step people through that, please?
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think when you see the headlines that investors are as pessimistic as ever, or when you see the headlines that people are flooding into cash or have already flooded into cash because of what risks they perceive for the market, I think that's pretty unnerving. I think the challenge for investors is to remember, though, that, first and foremost, what are we measuring and why? So you look at that Yale study as just one example. Really, the question that they're asking is, what's the likelihood, what's the probability of a 1929-style market crash happening in the next 6 months? And what we saw from that study, from what researchers got responses from individual investors, is that about 85% of individuals think there's a greater than 10% chance. So yeah, maybe not highly likely, but certainly they think it's within the realm of possibility that we could have a meaningful stock market collapse. And you know, I think that tells you first and foremost that there's a lot of stuff going on that causes uncertainty right now. And we saw the fastest bear market that we've ever seen, both in terms of how quickly we entered and how quickly we exited. It's no wonder that investors feel that uncertainty. The other side of that, though, is that as a result, according to Bank of America, there's $4.4 trillion in cash sitting on the sidelines. And so you look at that number and go, okay, ultimately, some of that cash is going to stay on the sidelines, but a lot of that probably has to come back to something. If cash is paying as little as it is, if the safer alternatives aren't yielding very much, at some point in time, people are going to come back to the things that offer risk, the things that offer some potential return, because I think the reality is investors need return to meet their objectives. And so, you know, we're fond of saying that markets climb a wall of worry. Well, here we are. There's plenty of worry out there just about any way you measure it. We're fond of saying that, you know, the capitulation point, the point at which investors give up because they just can't take the volatility anymore, is the point at which we tend to see things turn. Well, with $4.4 trillion in cash on the sidelines, I think a lot of the selling that would have happened already has. And so, you know, while I don't want to be overly optimistic about how poorly people view the next 6 months, about how much uncertainty there is out there, I do think potentially it's a sign of optimism if you're properly balanced. I think it's a sign of optimism if you look at history and say that the previous periods where we've had these kinds of spikes have tended to precede some pretty strong markets, some pretty strong stock markets. And so, you know, certainly the worst doesn't have to be over, but I do think that these are some good signs.
You know, Kyle, as we've seen over the years, it's basically the law of physics. If anybody that was going to sell sold, it's challenging for the market to go even lower. So when you get that maximum amount of pessimism out there, sounds counterintuitive, but it's actually a bullish indicator at some point, because what typifies a market bottom is, of course, you've exhausted all sellers. So pretty interesting piece. I encourage people to read the newsletter tonight when it comes out, or when you get a chance, and look at that article. Speaking of the newsletter, Joel, I'd like to just spend a moment on your article. I thought it was just a wonderful summation of what people need to do as they get older. So every single senior citizen needs to look at your article as like a list of what you need to prepare for as you age. Joel, you want to step people through this?
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Bob. We all know that we decline as we grow older. We usually think of it more with our bodies, but our minds decline too. It's something that's kind of hard to admit for some of us. And I look on the podcast, there are four of us who were alive when President Eisenhower was in office. So it hits close to home. And scientists tell us that, we tend to have cognitive loss as we age. And one of the first things affected by that cognitive loss is financial decision-making, understanding finances. So it's important, not even when you're a senior citizen, but even before that, to make sure that you're prepared for that. There are several things you can do, and we kind of go through some of it in the article, but to make sure that you've arranged things, that you get organized a little with your finances, which everybody can do at any time of their life. And they'll benefit from it. And as you get older too, to maybe simplify things, to have more automated payments and things like that, so that you're relying on your financial literacy a little less. And then the things that are really important for as you get older is to communicate, to deputize, to have people around you that you trust who are watching your back, who are watching your finances and can help you through some of these things. We joke about having senior moments and kind of laugh it off, but this can actually have some serious consequences to finances. As a firm, we have all sorts of things that we watch out for. A couple of years ago, started having trusted contact information for clients so that they tell us, and we have on file names and contact information of people that our clients trust to get a hold of in case we detect something that might be awry as people get older.
Kyle and Art, I want to spend just a minute before we finish to remind investors to focus on the longer term, particularly now with the virus headcounts going way up, the election coming up, all sorts of uncertainties out there. I think now more than almost any time in my past, it's so critically important to focus on 2-3 years from now as the economy recovers, people get vaccinated, and we get back to some semblance of normalcy. Pretty challenging to do when, Kyle's reporting that levels of pessimism are almost at record levels. Keep your head in the game. It's one of the most valuable things we do as money managers is to try to keep people from trading on their emotions. Emotion is not an investment strategy, yet all sorts of people trade based just on emotions. So you want to avoid that temptation as best you can. Kyle, you want to jump in?
Yeah, just to stress that I think what's coming from this is an economy that's much more resilient to these kinds of things in the future. If there's anything we learned from the financial crisis or the stock market crash in the 80s, it's that we tend not to fall victim to the same things. There's something new that's going to bring us down for sure. But we tend to insulate our economy. We tend to insulate our businesses from those risks that we can now better understand. And so, you know, I think as we look at 2 to 3 years down the road, as we look at what that means for businesses broadly, what that means for the economy, it probably means that the next time we deal with something like this, we're better prepared. We have better tools to navigate those risks. But it also means that even as we're not dealing with these issues in the future, we've geared businesses to be more productive. And, you know, if there's one thing I've learned, it's that productivity will be the key to driving economic growth for the long run. And if we can get that productivity growth, whether it's because we have to or just because we want it, and I think right now it's because we have to, unfortunately, that's going to help the economy to be stronger longer term. That's going to help to drive profitability for businesses, which in turn drives the earnings that we all care about.
Art, some last thoughts?
Yeah, the Boy Scout motto is be prepared, and we are always prepared. And we prepare our clients by preparing those portfolios to withstand downturns, which inevitably happen periodically. So I think it's far better to be humble, to be prepared for what might happen, than to be certain that something is going to happen. We talk about that on a regular basis, because if you're wrong, you can lose. So we want to be prepared for anything, and that's my suggestion going forward.
Well, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.